Mid-mornings with Lee Chambers.
That's Africa by Toto, which is an appropriate track for my guest, Ian Packham. Hello, Ian.
Good morning.
Hello, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much.
And Ian, you're author of Encircle Africa, Around Africa by Public Transports, because you attempted to complete the first solo and unassisted circumnavigation of Africa using only public transport. So the obvious question, why?
That might be the obvious question. It's almost the hardest question to answer, and there's not really an answer other than I wanted to do a bit of travelling, and I saw Africa on a map, and it looked like an intriguing thing to try and do. And only later in the research did I find out that no one had done this before by publicly available transport. So I just wanted to go and really see if it was possible, see if I could cope with doing it.
But, I mean, you've always been interested in travelling, haven't you? This isn't the first kind of big challenge that you've done.
It's not the first. It's certainly the biggest. I've done some sort of mountain peaks before and some long walks across Hadrian's Wall, for example. But this was much, much bigger sort of entity, and it took up my life for quite a long time in planning it, organising, obviously saving up to do it.
And paint a picture for us. What did you have with you when you were travelling?
So I thought I had quite a big kit bag with me, but then everyone I met afterwards said it was really small. I had about 15 kilos of kit, and that was everything from a tent to medical supplies, a little bit of emergency food, so a can of sardines, which turned out to be really, really useful, and then just everyday stuff like clothes and the toothpaste that you need to go around.
And when you decided you were going to do this, did you set yourself certain rules that you had to follow?
The rules were very basic. It was to use publicly available transport and to stick to the road as close to the coast as I possibly could. And that was really the only rules I had.
So by publicly available transport, you're meaning what?
So transport in Africa is a lot different to how we would imagine it here. There's no sort of integrated transport systems. There's no timetables or publicly run buses. So it really comes down to men who have got a car who are willing to take people further along the road. It's organised in the sense that they sell tickets, the car fills up, and then the driver will head off in the direction he's heading for. But if he doesn't feel like doing it that day, it means there's no transport that day.
Right, so quite a challenge.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did you do it?
I did, indeed.
Well, congratulations. Did you ever think it couldn't be done? Were there points in your journey where you thought, oh, what have I done?
There were a couple of points when I thought, why am I doing this? It would just be easier to go home.
And were there some scary points? I mean, there must have been points where you were in remote places on your own thinking, here I am waiting for a bus or something.
Actually, that's something that people ask me, and there were very, very few scary moments. There was one moment when I was trying to get into the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the officials wanted an awful lot of money, sort of under the table, to allow me in, despite the fact I had a visa. So they sent me back to the neighbouring country that I'd come from, and then they wanted money to let me back into the country because I'd officially left. So that took a while of persuading people, and that was obviously not quite scary at the time, very nervous, and I'm thinking, what can I do? If I don't get into that country, then I can't get into the next one, and it causes all sorts of problems. But very few moments when I was sort of scared for my belongings or for my life. And people, I think because I was alone and using publicly available transport, people looked after me really well.
Yes, you said that in your book, that you were treated often by local people as if you were part of their family.
Absolutely. They'd invite me for tea or for food, walk me miles out of their way to find the right bus. And I don't think I would have that sort of experience if I was trying to do it in England, say.
So were there moments uplifting that you thought, wow, this is, you know, I would never, if I'd have been in a taxi, I would never have encountered this?
It was just those random interactions with people, such as I was on a bus in Angola and be travelling for 12 hours or something, and I had no idea where to go once I got to the destination, and this young mother with a couple of young kids said, just, oh, follow me, and she took me into this sort of waste ground, which was the bus station, and there was a whole community of people camping out there overnight waiting for the next bus the next morning, and she gave me a little bit of the matting she'd brought to sleep on, and I was part of her family for that night.
That's fantastic. And you're mentioning countries here. You mentioned Angola there. You mentioned another one previously, Democratic Republic of Congo. I mean, did you find, as you moved around Africa, because we just brand it as this continent, obviously it's massive, that you were, as you moved from country to country, attitudes changed?
Yeah, Africa is absolutely huge, and it's difficult to come across how big the place is. And it sort of goes in a regional sort of scenario. So West Africa is fairly similar in cultures, and then Central Africa again, and then South Africa, or Southern Africa, I should say, is again slightly different. So you don't notice it immediately, but just certain things, maybe the language or the drink of choice might change, just those little things that tell you you've moved on.
And how long were you away for? How long were you doing this?
It's a total of 13 months.
13 months. So when you came back to this country, it must have been a bit of a culture shock.
I thought it was going to be, and it was amazing to have, you know, flat pavements which you could walk on without looking where you're going, and escalators and that sort of thing. But, you know, within a couple of hours, I was sat on the sofa with a cup of tea, watching the TV as if nothing had happened.
And you list the things that happened to you. You fought off thieves in Senegal. You were tear gassed in a museum. You were mistaken for an undercover UN official during Liberia's presidential election campaign. We could talk forever, but that last one is particularly intriguing. What happened there?
So that's a really interesting story, and it shows the cultural differences between people in the West who quite happily go and travel to people in Africa. I just bumped into the local policeman in this small town in Liberia, and his reasoning for a white guy being there was that I was with the UN working undercover to ensure the presidential election was taking place correctly, because he said no one would come all the way from Europe just to go and see things. I must be there to sort of check up on them, as it were.
Wow. Did you find any country more difficult than the other? Was there one where you thought, I just can't wait to get out of here because this is really challenging?
Only one out of 31 countries I went through, and that was Djibouti, which is this tiny little bit of a country in East Africa near Somalia. And despite up until that point, I'd done 9 or 10 months of travel, but I still couldn't get any real interaction out of the local community, and I found that very hard. To really do anything, to buy anything in a shop, because I could get no response from these people.
And you kept diaries while you were travelling, yes, which you've used to write your book. How has it been writing the book, reliving it all again?
It's a very different sort of scenario to doing the trip, and the stuff I'd actually forgotten that had happened when I was reading back. And it was quite hard, and it took me as long to write the book as it did to actually do the trip and form it into a sensible narrative story that people would enjoy.
And looking at your diaries and being able to sort of look from the distance of time, really, as well as geographically, is there anything that you would have done differently, do you think?
Oh, that's such a difficult question. I think, given I really didn't know day to day what I was doing, it would be very difficult to have done anything differently. Except maybe that very early on I paid a couple of bribes to make my life easier, and then I stopped and I realised if you just refuse and sit down, put out your book, start reading, then after a while they let you go. So I probably would just not have paid those bribes at the very beginning.
What was the biggest, I mean, you talk about bribes there, and you mentioned bribes before, I mean, what was the biggest difference that you found between, I suppose, this country and Africa? Was it that, you know, money had to change hands for things to happen?
I think, yeah, I mean, bribery is an interesting question because it's like a sliding scale. There are no fixed prices in Africa. So everything from buying a bottle of water to, you know, getting through buying a visa is negotiable. So when that becomes a bribe is quite a difficult question to answer. But there are some obvious times when somebody says, you're not coming through unless you give me this money, despite the fact you have all the paperwork you need.
Well, that's quite challenging then. Yeah, then you decide how much you reach into your pocket for, I guess.
Yeah, and I wasn't travelling with a lot of money, and the bribes I paid were, you know, very small, and I'm kind of embarrassed that I paid them, to be honest. I wish I hadn't.
Did it change your view of Africa, actually, travelling around it?
Absolutely. I mean, the only things you see about Africa on TV, I mean, at the moment, what, you've got Ebola, and that's the only thing you hear. But it's such a vibrant and diverse place, and as I say, everyone was so friendly and helpful. It's just such a different response to what you see. I'm very happy and positive about Africa's future, actually, having travelled around it.
And having had those interactions with people, and having seen undoubtedly some beautiful things as well.
Mm.
Waterfalls, and I mean, it's a stunning continent.
The natural beauty of Africa is just staggering. The beaches of West Africa are just pristine sand, and there should be tourists all over them. I'm glad they weren't, because it was all for me, but there should be, and these waterfalls and these, you know, the wildlife as well. There's just such a lot to offer.
So what's next, Ian? What's your next challenge?
Well, I've got a few smaller ones planned for this year, including I've got a guidebook to Scandinavia from 1960, and I'm going to use that to head off to probably Denmark and Norway and just use that as my only guide to getting around and see how things have changed in Scandinavia since.
Right, no internet, just that guidebook.
No internet, no modern maps or anything, just that guidebook.
And tell us about Michael Palin, just as we're ending the interview, but because you were on Mastermind, were you not? And Michael Palin was your specialist subject.
Yes, before I went off on In Circle Africa, I applied to go onto Mastermind and got on, and my specialist subject was his travelogues, which I'd been a fan of for years and years, really. As I'd grown up, I just watched them, and I did quite well. And then afterwards, about a week later, I had a letter from the BBC, and there was a letter from Michael Palin, and they're saying how much he had enjoyed watching me on the programme.
Oh, what a lovely... That just confirms what we all think about Michael Palin, doesn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely,
what a lovely,
yes.
Lovely man. Well, thank you very much, Ian, for coming
into
to the studio. Good luck with the book. If people want to buy a copy of it, where can they go?
So it's available on Amazon or through bookshops, or you can get signed copies from my own website, which is encircleafrica.org.
And the book itself is called In Circle Africa, Around Africa by Public Transport. Well, good luck with your next trip. That does sound great. And you must come back in and tell us all about it.
Excellent.
From 10 till 1.
Mid-mornings with Phil Rowe.
Cambridge 105. To Power on Cambridge 105 and Hong